we need, or we imagine we need, the resources that are presently being underused in, from our point of view, by native peoples. That was what our argument here in North America was. You are underusing all these wonderful resources, and God wants us to take them away from you and put them to good use.
Hello, my child. Welcome to this world. Before you grow up, there are a few things I need to tell you. You were born worthless, void, corrupt. You were born a sinner, and the wages of sin is death. Someday, when you are old enough to understand, you must ask forgiveness. Not for anything you've done, but for what others did thousands of years ago at the beginning of the world. Also, you must tell God how sorry you are for murdering his son Jesus. I know, it happened generations before you drew your first breath, and it was ultimately part of God's divine plan, but the responsibility is yours. You are guilty. And you must ask to be forgiven. A portion of everything you produce in your lifetime must be given to God, who will never accept your offerings personally. You will listen for him, but his voice will never be heard audibly. You will thank him for his direction and guidance, but his mysterious ways will confuse you. In fact, although you are more important to God than anything else in the universe, he will never show you his face or reveal himself in any provable way. I know this seems strange. To truly know God, you must study a book, an ancient book, written thousands of years ago in a language you do not understand. You must fulfill a great commission to make others see the world as you do, to have them believe as you do, to live as you do, and then to go out and convince even more to do the same. As a reward for this, you will be given the privilege of praising God without end, for all eternity, in a hidden, happy place that can only be seen by the dead. You must pledge your entire life on this earth to your invisible Father and his great commission, or he will send you to a dark pit, where the flesh is roasted from your bones and you writhe in unimaginable agony forever and ever and ever. But you must not do this because you fear horrible torture and pain. You must do it because you love God. No matter what happens throughout your lifetime, the more your world seems to defy everything I've taught you here, just continue to say the words out loud. God is real. God is good. And one day, you will look into the eyes of your own child, and you'll teach him these very same things, so that he can someday teach his own children, and their children, and their children, for generations. You'll hold him in your arms, and you'll look down at him and say, "Welcome to this world."
Nothing people knew before that was worth knowing. Nothing people had before that was worth having. Nothing people did before that was worth doing. God knew that. God never spoke to Homo habilis or Homo erectus. He didn't even speak to Homo sapiens for the first 200,000 years of his life. God wouldn't waste his time talking to savages. he was waiting for someone worth talking to. Someone fully human. Someone smart enough to recognize the destiny he had set for man. Someone who could appreciate him. Someone civilized. He was waiting for me. In mankind's life story, the 200,000 generations that lived and died before me don't count for anything. So you don't have to think about them. They lived and died for nothing. Except, in the end, to produce me, the ruler of the world.
Ideology is not your friend. And ideology, some people think what we're trying to do here is sort out good ideologies from bad. Should I be a Marxist? Should I be a deconstructionist? And the answer is no, none of the above. All ideologies are viral infections of some sort, mimetic infection that erode your functionability and your comfort with yourself. Ideologies set up polarities that are based on discontent. And ideologies are always, always, always based on false premises. Whatever the, I mean, name an ideology and I'll tell you the false premises that it's based on. So, part of this process of cultural maturity that I've been talking about is to get beyond ideology without embracing cynicism. It's not a fuck you thing. It's a deeply saddening awareness that we are not yet angel enough, that we should take ourselves that seriously.
Well, the fundamental number one thing is that indigenous peoples experience nature as alive and intelligent and aware. And the mechanistic paradigm that began to emerge from the Enlightenment on really has tended to view nature as dead and unthinking, just kind of like that we're on a ball of rock, which is essentially a resource base hurtling around the sun, the only intelligent life form that is, you know. And that perspective that we're trained in from the moment we begin schooling is incredibly unusual. It's the first time in the history of human habitation of Earth that any culture has believed anything remotely like that. You know, and James Hillman came up with a marvelous point about it. He said, you see, they had to convince us that the Earth was dead because otherwise they could not begin their autopsy in earnest. That phrasing, I mean, we're looking at the dismantling of the world itself, and the reason why industrialists and scientists can get away with it so easily is because we're all trained that the Earth basically doesn't have any feelings, that it's not alive or aware. And so it's that one fundamental difference that separates out indigenous peoples and even ancient cultures from our culture now.
Thank you.
What you do with your money is your business. But when you begin to spend your money in my territory, that disrupts and destroys our way of life, our civilization, then that becomes my business. My investors, the water, the air, the medicines, the plants, the four-leggeds, the buffalo, have invested in our civilization for thousands and thousands of years that has sustained our way of life. Fundamentally, I think your nation is rich in protecting the environment, and you need to practice that ethical reality, or the tar sands are. Masi Cho, thanks for allowing me to speak here. I thank you very much. Masi Cho.
Paulette's message is not what the shareholders want to hear.
Well, I was walking one day through a magnificent forest. I was listening to the birds sing along with the chorus as the sweet evening breeze shook the leaves of the trees. I knelt down on my knees to see these many small complexities. Then I lay neath the tree and dreamed of its duality between a life of such simplicity and such beautiful intricacy. Oh, but then suddenly I heard the sound of an axe start to pound and a chainsaw go round and a bulldozer pulling it all to the ground. Oh, they were cutting the trees, the magnificent trees, trees that never conceived of such clear-cut catastrophes. So I ran up to the loggers, who all gave me some strange looks, as if I was a character in one of those Dr. Seuss books. So I said, I am the Lorax, I speak for the trees. Yes, I speak for the trees hold the keys. Yes, trees have no tongues, but trees don't need these. They're like gigantic lungs as they fold out their leaves. They use the sun's energies to make their food recipes, and simultaneously they make the air that we need more suitable and usable for us all to breathe. Oh, this generous deed, it all comes from a small seed, not to mention the entire variety of fruit on which we feed. Oh yeah, the tree gives us material from which we build our shelters, or a paper or a pencil or many musical instrumentals. Oh, the tree, some trees impart wisdom, others give us good medicine, some even open up pathways to other galactic dimensions. Oh now, some trees grow gardens of epiphytic plants. Yes, some trees feed colonies of symbiotic ants. Oh, you see, the tree lives in peace, in a balanced harmony between the sun's energy and the ant colony. And all this, the tree never even charges a fee guaranteed to you and me, absolutely free. So now I enter my plea to the human species. Please set free the tree from your self-serving slavery. Stop clear-cutting ecosystems of biodiversity and then farming fake forest monocrop. Clone genetically, grown pathetically, cut mechanically, treated chemically, sold to you for cheap Home Depot aisle 3.
What we're doing right now is converting the planet's biomass into human mass. Right now, it's estimated that 200 species a day are becoming extinct because of our needs are driving them into extinction as we burn down forests, convert land to cropland. And this is an attack on the biodiversity of the living community. We depend completely on that living community, and always will. We are in a period of mass extinctions. Now that's well acknowledged. We're like people living at the top of a tall building. Every day we go down to the lower floors and knock out 200 bricks from the walls and take them back upstairs to improve our own space. This can go on for quite a while because there are a lot of bricks in a big building, but eventually there's going to develop a fault and the building is going to come down very rapidly. And that's going to happen to us if we continue to live this way. It's very doubtful that 6 billion people is a sustainable human population. But as for how long we can go on like this, that I wouldn't try to predict.
Some stories last many centuries, others only a moment. All alter over that lifetime, like beach glass, grow distant and more beautiful with salt. Yet even today, to look at a tree and ask the story, "Who are you?" is to be transformed. There is a stage in us where each being, each thing, is a mirror. Then the bees of self pour from the hive door, ravenous to enter the sweetness of flowering nettles and thistle. Next comes the ringing of a stone or violin or empty bucket gives off the immeasurable's continuous singing before it goes back into story and feeling. In Borneo, there are palm trees that walk on their high roots. Slowly, with effort, they lift one leg, then another. I would like to join that stilted transmigration, to feel my own skin vertical as theirs, as an ant road, a highway for beetles. I would like not minding whatever travels my heart, to follow it all the way into leaf form, bark furl, root touch, and then keep walking unimaginably further.
Some see a feather and think it frail. But the feathered ones arrived as souls with only hollow quills and eiderdown. And they were the ones who saw the stars of both hemispheres before human beings ever could. It's the ones with the little frail feathers discovered the new worlds first and left them unharmed, and crossed oceans before humans dared, saw unending aerial views of earth and sky, while mere humans had to wait for centuries to fledge satellites into the air that could see for them. There are those souls born into this earth to bear 25,000 feathers over a lifetime. These winged ones climb the wind, and they can cover 2,500 miles in a single migration. These souls, so small and yet so great, carry the overview and the ground view, all from flying until exhausted, then resting, feasting, homing, birthing, and finally, up again and away, through the storm, through sunlight, through the wonder and the danger and the hunger for it all. Some look at this winged creature and see only a swath of painted feathers. But these souls were born into the earth, explicitly created to fly through more than one world, and to return, ever return to tell the stories of what can be seen when one is allowed to soar. And so may it be for you, and so may it be for me. And so may it be for all of us.
Man belongs to the world. Actually, it's plainly written in their lives. It's plainly written in the general community to which they belonged, the community of life on this planet. Anyone can read it. You just have to look. Every creature born in the biological community of the Earth belongs to that community. Nothing lives in isolation from the rest. Nothing can live in isolation from the rest. Nothing lives only in itself, needing nothing from the community. Nothing lives only for itself, owing nothing to the community. Nothing is untouchable or untouched. Every life in the community is owed to the community and is paid back to the community in death. The community is a web of life, and every strand of the web is a path to all the other strands. Nothing is exempt. Nothing is special. Nothing lives on a strand by itself, unconnected to the rest. Nothing is wasted. Everything that lives is food for another. And everything that feeds is ultimately itself fed upon, or in death returns its substance to the community. And in belonging to the community, each species is shaped by belonging. By belonging, by feeding and being fed upon, each generation of each species is shaped. Of each generation, some, better suited to survive, live to reproduce. Others, less well suited, do not. And so the generations are shaped by belonging to the community that shapes them. Nothing is exempt from the shaping.
And on this day, may a good vision catch you. May it be a benevolent vision that takes hold of you and moves you. May a deep and full vision come over you and burst open all around you. May a luminous vision inform you and enfold you. One that awakens into the story that surrounds you. And may this wondrous story illuminate what's before you and within you. May the wilderness that makes beauty arise, as between two lovers, arise beautifully between your body and the body of the land, between your flesh and the flesh of this earth, here and now, on this very day. May you taste something sacred.
And one day, you will look into the eyes of your own child, and you'll teach him these very same things, so that he can someday teach his own children. and their children and their children for generations. You'll hold him in your arms, and you'll look down at him and say, "Welcome to this world.